The United States is the world's largest producer and exporter of ethanol. After 30 years of tax credits and trade protection, does ethanol still need these subsidies? Can the federal government even afford them?
Well, what we found out when we reduce or eliminate subsidies too quickly, we find out that there is an unintended consequence, which is that production capacity is then compromised and ultimately jobs are lost. At a time in this country where we need more people working, not fewer people, I think we have to be careful about what we do relative to the support for the biofuel industry. There are either directly or indirectly, I'm told, over 400,000 folks who are employed in that industry. When the biodiesel tax credit was allowed to expire a year or so ago, we saw 50% of production capacity end immediately and 12,000 jobs being lost. Again, let me remind you of the statistics and circumstances of rural America, where unemployment levels have historically been a lot higher than in other parts of the country and poverty rates a lot higher. If we're going to aggressively address that imbalance in our economy, we have got to have new opportunities and alternatives for job growth and for income growth in urban in rural areas. If we're to meet the President's challenge of reducing our reliance on foreign oil by a third, we're going to need to have a robust biofuel industry. Now, to do that, we need to move away from corn-based ethanol, which everyone recognizes and which we are doing. The USDA is helping to sponsor a variety of alternative feedstocks, from algae to grasses to woody biomass to agricultural waste and others, to create new supplies and new ways to produce ethanol. At the same time, we have to make ethanol more readily available, making sure that our pumping and distribution systems throughout the United States make it convenient for consumers. If we had not had an ethanol industry, if magically we could just sort of wave a magic wand and the entire biofuel industry would leave the country, everyone in this country would be paying on average about 90 cents a gallon more for their gas. It gives us an opportunity for competition. It gives us an opportunity for innovation. It gives us an opportunity for job growth. And an opportunity for rural communities. When we reach the 36 billion gallon threshold, which Congress has set as where we need to be within the next decade or so, we will reduce our reliance on foreign oil by about 17%, which just happens to be the percentage that we currently import from the Middle Eastern countries, an area of the world which is unstable. That instability has reflected itself in the cost at the pump. If we want to stabilize that cost, stabilize energy costs in this country, provide more economic opportunity, then we obviously have to have a robust commitment to biofuels. Does that mean continuing subsidies forever? No. Does it mean that they have to be continued until we reach the 36 billion gallons? No. But I think we have to be very careful about the way in which we go about reducing those subsidies. And I think the time has come for us to maybe redirect some of that support towards helping the industry provide more convenient supply and encouraging Detroit to consider the very small investment of $100 to $150 a car to make every single vehicle coming off the line a flexible fuel vehicle. We now have roughly 8 million cars in the fleet today, about 230 million that are flexible fuel vehicles. If we increase that percentage significantly, it would provide additional market opportunities. Let me just say one other thing about this industry. There's also a national security imperative here. The Navy signed an MOU with the USDA to work towards producing 50% of its fuel needs in biofuel. Why? Because it is not comfortable meeting our national security needs by relying on unstable sources of oil. They much more prefer relying on our own capacities within the United States. So while I understand people's desire and I understand the need for us to be fiscally responsible, let me just simply say that we don't want to cut our way out of a growth opportunity. There are a million jobs at stake here, potentially, as we expand this industry, and over $100 billion of capital investment sorely needed in rural areas so that we get more economic activity in those areas. So I think we have to be very careful about that.
Okay, following up on that with the structure of biofuels programs, you've got basically a three-legged stool on this. You've got a 45-cent a gallon blender's credit that goes to blenders of biofuels. You've got a 54-cent tariff on ethanol imports, largely from Brazil. And then you've got a mandate, 13.2 billion gallons of corn-based ethanol this year, rising to 15 billion. A lot of the 36 actually become cellulosic. So you have this mandate that already requires more than $13 billion, and I think last year's production was, what, 13.6? So when you're looking at that, why can you not simply get by with the mandate, which already requires about the same sort of production level, and save taxpayers $5.7 billion in the blender's credit and promote free trade with Brazil?
First of all,
I covered this.
Yeah, you did. You covered it. I think it's you got to be careful about that savings to the taxpayer, because to the extent that you compromise the jobs that are currently in this industry, to the extent that you compromise the capital investment that's already been made, you may see a loss of revenue as a result of job losses. So I think you have to be careful in terms of the numbers you use. I think it's fairly clear that the tariff with Brazil will be phased out over a period of time. I don't think there's any question about that. But right now, Brazil's having their own difficulties meeting their own needs, and they had to actually reduce the percentage of ethanol in their own vehicles because of challenges that they have with their own production processes. The reason why you need assistance and help is because you're bumping up against the thing you didn't mention in your question, is you're bumping up against the 15 billion gallon threshold that corn-based ethanol is ultimately capped out or tapped out in terms of the renewable fuel standard, which means the next 21 billion gallons have to come from some source other than corn-based. You have to work to get those new feedstocks to a point where they're efficiently produced, and they will need some help and assistance to get there. But again, the benefits to the country of more jobs in rural America, more capital investment in rural America, stronger bottom lines for producers, alternatives to use non-productive land more productively, opportunities for new innovations to occur. There are also byproducts that occur from this process which help the livestock industry and other businesses. Tremendous opportunities there. And there is also a trade component to this. So, I think you just have to be careful in terms of this debate that we don't limit our capacity to grow our way out of a deficit. USDA has done a good job so far in terms of responding to the deficit. We knocked out $4 billion of our crop insurance costs to the government and applied that to deficit reduction last year. The continuing resolution that was passed by Congress hit USDA about as hard as any department of government. We took about a 10% cut to our discretionary spending, and the House is considering another 13% on top of that. So, we are helping, but I think I'm very concerned that we're going to limit our capacity to grow our way out of this deficit in addition to cutting our way out of it.
One final question on ethanol, because it's such a fascinating topic.
Because you cover it.
A lot of people have questions about ethanol in here as well. I think it's the crowd we're talking to today. That $15 billion limit that'll hit, I think, around 2015 or so, there's already a cellulosic other type of feedstocks limit component that is put in there. It tends to get waived every year because the capacity of the industry isn't quite up to that point. When that $15 billion comes in a couple years and corn continues to be productive and U.S. farmers continue to have bumper crops, are we going to start hearing people say, well, we don't really need the cellulosic ethanol, there's more corn for it? Is there going to be any discussion on that in a few years? And if not, why not?
I don't think so, because I think the key for this industry is to become a national as opposed to a regional industry. Right now, most of what's happening in ethanol production is pretty much located in the Midwest. Our goal at USDA is to make sure that every part of the country has an opportunity to produce biofuel in the way that's most convenient and efficient and effective for them. So it may be in the Northwest you use woody biomass. It may be in the Southeast you use perennial grasses. It may be in other areas that algae is available. There are tremendous things occurring in this space that are going to lead to new opportunities. I mean, just consider how it is that America built a strong middle class, built the strongest economy in the world. It was because we were in the business of innovation. We were in the business of making and creating things. For far too long, we've been out of that business. The biofuel industry is one way we get back into that business, and if we get back into it in a robust way, we're going to produce not just biofuel, but we're going to find that there are a multitude of co-products and byproducts that will arise from this production process. Let me give you an example. In Shenandoah, Iowa, there's a facility that's producing ethanol, the traditional way, corn-based ethanol. There are three components when the corn goes in. There's protein, there's starch, and there's CO2. The starch basically is used to produce the fuel. What do you do with the protein? Well, you make a livestock feed, which is helping the livestock industry. A third of the corn crop actually comes out, or the ethanol production process actually comes out as livestock feed. What do you do with the CO2? Well, this company decided they were going to make use the CO2 with heat from the production process and reclaimed water and produce algae. They get to harvest algae every day through a sort of vertical and horizontal farming. So you'll be able to, on a small number of acres, have a tremendous crop of algae that can be used as an aquaculture feed, can be used for cosmetics, can be used also as a feedstock for fuel. There are 30,000 different kinds of algae. I mean, these are unlimited circumstances and opportunities. The formula that the president has established to rebuild this economy is a relatively simple one. The government will spend less but spend wisely. We will have an economy that once again makes, creates, and innovates. And because we will make and create and innovate things that have never been made or created or innovated before, we'll be able to export that opportunity to the rest of the world, and we'll be able, through those exports, to create wealth in this country. It has worked in agriculture. It has worked in agriculture. Less debt in agriculture, more productivity, larger exports. Today, we're looking at income levels that could be the highest that they've been in quite some time.